we never
rocking
let,
this morning.
We never let the music go. This song is kind of fun. Actually, I kind of like it. We should do that more. So, welcome to We the People.
Yeah,
and sorry, we've been on a little hiatus.
Yeah, we lost our minds for what, 3 weeks?
We did too. Yeah. We just had stuff.
Yeah,
trade shows and stuff going on.
Traveling here and there.
So we played you some of the best of for the last few weeks. And actually, I have to say, I think they like us better on recorded than they do in real life.
Yeah, the numbers proved it. Yeah, we need to just go away. We're a hindrance.
We need to just go away. Let's just do the shows we already did.
We're messing
just
up our own show.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're glad you guys liked it. There was a lot of good information in there. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, John Deere and Kubota here in Shasta Lake, California. You need a tractor, any kind of a tractor, we'll get it for you. But we're a John Deere Kubota dealer, and right now they're running service specials. If you've got a machine that needs to get tuned up or ready for the spring, bring it in. We'll get right on it and get it out of there. You can reach them at 226-9226. And they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller. They're on Twin View Boulevard. Team Power.
Just north of Reading.
There you go.
All righty.
Who do we have today?
Well, okay, first, I was going to say, I know a lot of our people are finding us, obviously, online. The website is wethepeopleradio.us. We put a page together for every show, and then after the show, we put you with an archive on there so you can listen, actually commercial free. So we celebrate capitalism during the show, and then we sort of eliminate the capitalism after that, which does save you a little time. And you can forward to your friends. There's an MP3 file on there, and it goes back to like 2010. Got years of information. So we have two people on today. The first half of the show is Rahil Raza. We've had her on before. She's a Clarion Project Advisory Board member. And then the second half, we're going to talk about the FISA court with our national security guest, Bruce Moran.
Everybody's talking about FISA nowadays.
So I guess we'll all get smart about the FISA court and how that all works and some of the stuff with McCabe and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But Rahil is going to come on with us today and talk about I'll just read her little thing here. Rahil Raza contends that America's youth are being radicalized and that this crisis requires immediate action to prevent violent attacks in the United States and the Western world. And I think after we all watched the youth of America march yesterday to have their constitutional rights taken away.
Yeah, they're a little confused on that.
Like
it was
going
it
backwards.
Was a march about school safety, but it
somehow
turned
became
out to be
anti-gun
rally. So, yeah, a little mixed.
So I was kind of excited
there.
Today. We were talking about, helping the youth not be radicalized to do bad things.
Yeah, like take our rights away.
Yeah, that too. Rahil, how's it going in there?
Great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Last time we chatted with you, you're on your way to the airport, so hopefully we caught you on a less dramatic Sunday. How's that?
Yes, it's always dramatic, but world events sort of keep me on my toes, but I'm not going to the airport right now. I'm traveling tomorrow.
You have, like, family in the car, and you're trying to negotiate the terms.
I know. I apologize.
No, it was kind of fun riding along with you. No, we enjoyed it. So you are a Clarion Project Advisory Board member, and you're a founding member of the Muslim Reformer Movement, and you're also an international human rights activist. And you live in Canada, right?
I live in Canada. I'm in Toronto.
Right. So you want to put a little plug in about the Clarion Project before we get started?
Yes, of course. The Clarion Project actually specializes in exposing the dangers of radical Islamist ideology, and at the same time gives voice to progressive liberal humanist Muslims like myself, and they do this through campaigns, they do this through documentaries. They make excellent documentaries, and they have a daily newsletter which goes out to thousands of people, and it keeps them abreast of what is happening in the world. And as you know, there's always something happening, which is not always good. So, their daily events, and Clarion has their finger on the pulse. They do a lot of investigation. They do a lot of work in counterterrorism, but they're also very concerned about presenting programs that are about prevention. And this current campaign that I'm involved in and that we're dealing with is an educational program to prevent the spread of radical Islamist ideology and violence among children and youth.
Outstanding. Does that make you pretty popular in your community, or
does that work? Of course, they love me to talk about things that they want to push under the carpet. But, you know, this is the point. The point is that this is an issue that has not been on the front burner, and, you know, there isn't a national program to talk about nonviolent extremism. I was, you know, I gave testimony to Congress, to the U.S. Congress in July, and I made four recommendations, and one of them was to counter this ideology, because this is a war of ideas, and the nonviolent ideology is what radicalizes youth, and there are statistics to prove it, because, you know, George Washington has a program on extremism, and they tell us that 153 individuals were charged in the U.S. with offenses related to the Islamic State, and 22% of them were 20 or younger.
Wow.
So the extremists specialize in mobilizing youth, in targeting youth, and, of course, in parts of the world where they're active, you know, where ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are active, they actively recruit young people, train them in madrasas, brainwash them. And they find that using even young children as young as 6 or 7 years old is very effective for them, because, you know, children can infiltrate into places where adults sometimes can't. But it's so evil, the fact that they are targeting our youth right here in America.
Yeah, and it's easy for them to radicalize them. It's very difficult for, you know, in our society, children are innocent. You don't do anything to harm a child, but yet they can militarize a child and send them out into our society.
Well, people aren't paying attention to what their kids are doing, especially online.
That's a tough
one. Your note here was kind of astounding. It says, according to CIA estimates, about 2,000 Westerners have traveled to Iraq and Syria, many via Turkey, to join ISIS.
Yes, they have, and many of them have been from the United States. And we are talking not just about Muslim youth. We are talking about Muslim and non-Muslim youth. So these extremists will target those youth who are vulnerable, those who have a vacuum in their lives. You know, young people are angry. They're, you know, angry about something all the time. They are angry at the status quo. They're isolated. And, you know, we see what is happening to the family structure. So not all parents are involved in what their children are doing. And this is how drug gangs work, you know, when they suck children into drugs and violence. But these are issues that are discussed in schools. You know, in schools, they'll talk about drug gangs. They'll tell the children to be aware of bullying. Now, they don't ever talk about radicalization. And what the Clarion Project has done is they have a campaign this year. They're producing a documentary in the fall called Jihad Generation, in which they have researched for 2 years the stories of those mothers and families whose children have been radicalized, who have said that if we could have seen the warning signs, perhaps we could have done something. So taking that into mind, the Clarion Project is creating educational programs that they want to work with law enforcement, with security agencies, with educators, with teachers, so that they can hopefully create that awareness and the prevention before the radicalization takes place.
Yeah, because there's been, you know, we've kind of swung hard the other way. You're not allowed, you know, we've almost made it a topic you're not allowed to discuss. I think it's probably high time. We need to take a really quick break and we'll come right back with you.
Okay.
There's quite a bit of information on this. And if you would like to find out more about Rahil Raza's work, you can find it all on wethepeopleradio.us.
That's me.
We are back. Rahil, we were talking about your program with the Clarion, and I was curious, where are you taking this? I mean, where are you teaching this in grade schools, in high schools?
Well, that is the hope. So at the moment, I have been traveling to various states and speaking to communities, speaking to educators, to law enforcement, to see where we can successfully use these programs. And mm-hmm. we are willing to cater the programs according to the needs of the community. So a month ago, I was in Minneapolis, and you may know that there is a very large Somali community, immigrant community that settled in Minneapolis. And there I met activists from the community, including a group called Mothers Against Youth Radicalization. Now, these are Somali Americans who are very concerned about the fact that their youth have been sucked in or manipulated to go and fight with Al-Shabaab in Somalia. And Al-Shabaab is a terrorist organization.
Sure.
And sometimes it happens under their noses and they don't know. So these mothers were weeping and they were saying that our youth are being radicalized. We know that. We don't know where and how it's happening and we need help. So what I'm doing at the moment as a preempt to the actual documentary and the work is meeting communities, meeting State Department people, law enforcement, security agencies, Homeland Security to see how we can expose the issue. The biggest drawback, of course, is the political correctness. And as you know, people are afraid to address the issue. So we want to encourage them to talk about it. And then once they agree to partner with us, we will engage community stakeholders to introduce this this program along with health education and social studies. We'll host workshops for stakeholders on how to identify individuals who may be at risk and how to provide a healthy outlet for these young people who are being appeased and wooed by the extremists.
Sure.
Because
they're at that age. They're at that age where they're looking for a cause or looking for to be a part of something. And unfortunately, this is what's happening.
And the parents don't see it coming?
Not all the time, you see, because which parent thinks that my child is going to get radicalized or my child is going to be converted to a radical form of this Islamist ideology? But this is what we want to do by speaking to the parents and giving, you know, asking them to look for the signs. Look for the signs of isolation. Look for the signs of an intense abnormal curiosity about the terrorists and the extremists. This is what we have studied from those who have already been radicalized, that, you know, the extremists work on the internet, they troll the internet,
sure,
these young people, and then they give them an idea that somehow they're going to be embraced by a brotherhood, and, you know, this is
right.
going to be, which, of course, is a cult. And these young people have no idea what they are heading into. It's only when they get there that they realize that they're going to be taught how to be suicide bombers or even that their lives are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when they come back, they've already been radicalized and then they are a danger to the society that they're living in. And what the extremists delight in doing is training them and sending them back so that they can harm the very country in which they live, the people among whom they live.
We've
seen this time and again.
Is there any... I guess I'm kind of curious because I know some of these kids have come here after living in those countries. Do they actually join after they see what these people have done? You know, if they live in a country that's constantly being blown up and then they come here, do they actually want to go back and be part of that? Or is it just kids who are kind of, you know, stupid and naive, you know, and think it's a, you know, cause?
Well, you know, there is something known as brainwashing. And when kids are convinced that they're going to do something that is going to change the world, the way it is presented to them is in a very romanticized way.
Mm-hmm.
So the messages that are coming from some Islamist organizations, they're not telling the kids outright, pick up a gun and go kill your friend. What they do is work on them. They tell them that, you know, this country is your enemy. Their values and your values are not in sync. And we're going to help you find a way in which to you know, better yourself, and you're going to do something that will change the world. And this is how they convince them. Why else would somebody, a young normal person, strap a bomb and go kill themselves?
Sure.
Obviously, they work on them, and, you know, young people are full of testosterone. And this is not something that happens overnight. It's done over a period of time. And our hope is that we can intervene before these kids are totally radicalized. Because, look, some of them have, you know, genuine grievances. You know, no country is perfect. They have grievances, but they need to be told that there is a way of addressing those grievances in a democratic way. You know, they need to find political solutions. They need to find counseling. But if the teachers and the parents and the clerics are not even aware of the problem, how are they going to find the solution? So we want to help them how to identify social clues, using techniques which we have derived from neuro-linguistic programming. And actually, we've had a successful, by we, I mean Clarion has had, is produced a successful CVE program used by an African NGO that is struggling with the threat of terrorism. And, you know, the mothers and the fathers, they're concerned. The parents are concerned about what is happening and the fact that the messaging that is coming from some of these institutions is not a message of compassion and love and tolerance.
No.
It's a message of us and them. It's a message of division. And how do you teach a young person to harm another one? You create hate. And we want to track where this messaging of hate, where this incitement towards hate is coming from.
Now, is part of your program showing these kids an alternative and some kind of a program that includes them in the community and gets them involved in something other than this?
Absolutely. To encourage and empower them to get involved is extremely important. So, you know, I've been meeting with organizations that work with drug gangs, for example. There's an organization, I was in L.A. last week, and they have an organization there called Peace Over Violence, a brilliant, brilliant NGO. And, you know, they work with all diverse communities, the young people, and they teach them how to channel their anger. They teach them that if you're approached by drug gangs and people who are trying to manipulate you into doing something that you instinctively know is wrong, to harm other people, how to have conversations and how to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are not trained. And here is where the irony is. You know, when a child is born, doctors and parents inoculate them against whatever virus is present at that time, you know, smallpox, polio. But we don't inoculate them against radicalization and radical messages. And sometimes they're innocent. They don't even know that these messages are, you know, tarnishing their mind and warping their way of thinking. So it's a very subtle program. And it's been going on for so long that, you know, we've come very late into the picture, but it's never too late to save our children, because they are the future of tomorrow, and we need to find ways. And when we look at the example of Europe, it's very frightening because...
Oh, they're a disaster.
There are men, women, children who have been sucked into this. You look at what the Nigerian armed group Boko Haram did. When had kidnapped those young girls, they trained them to become terrorists and suicide bombers, and one girl blew herself up with a baby strapped to her back.
Wow.
And you would think, you know, why? How would a young person do this? But this is what
that's some hardcore programming. I mean,
it is hardcore.
Jim Jones would be proud. I mean, yeah. That's,
we do need to have a counter narrative, a counter program,
sure.
Because no one is born a terrorist. No one is born a radical. Someone radicalizes.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't realize or don't think of is, when, you know, they're coming from a culture and a society that is so dysfunctional, and it's all they've ever known, they come over here and it's so foreign to them, they don't fit in. They don't know how to act. They don't know what to do with it.
And I guess they are kind of separate.
Yeah, they just kind of naturally go back to what they know. And then you get somebody, you know, talking sweet stuff in their ear about how they're going to make a change. And, I mean, I can understand how they could swing the wrong way. pretty easily.
Well, yes. I mean, I have two sons who have grown up here, and I know it could have been very easy to radicalize them. It's the conversation around the dining room table. It's what parents do at home. It's what they talk about. And kids pick up on these nuances. So are we teaching our kids loyalty to the land in which they live? Are we telling them how blessed they are to live in a country where they have freedom of choice, where they have, liberty, equality? No, in many cases, that's not the kind of messaging that they've been getting.
And that's where it starts.
That change in narrative is extremely important because, yes, those kids who come from traumatized countries have seen nothing but war. And instead of understanding that they have an opportunity to live in peace, that syndrome in them, towards violence and war, gets incited by the extremists who prey on them.
Right.
Who are looking for just such young targets, people who are at odds with their life, who are economically frustrated. And this is what we see in many immigrant communities. So it's the process of integration, settlement, and, assimilation is a very important factor where the government has to play a very important role in this.
How much of a factor is it that the parents don't know, a lot of times, and this has nothing to do with being immigrants, actually, a lot of times parents aren't very well versed in technology. And so they don't even know how to monitor their kids' online activity. The kids have, they have Facebook pages that the parents can't find and all that kind
of
stuff. And
don't speak the language, and the kids do.
Yeah, you have that.
Yes, there is a huge generation gap among the parents and the children. And, the parents have somehow just let go. Now, with immigrant parents, you also see this syndrome where they think that if they're going to send their child to a religious institution, somehow they've absolved themselves of the responsibility of teaching them. And, I know this as a Muslim parent. We sent our kids also to Sunday school, but the difference was we went with them just to make sure that we knew what they were being taught. And when my son was going to university, sometimes, the radical kinds of students would come to him. And our message was very clear to him that, whatever you want to learn about the faith, we will teach you at home. No one else has the right to teach you that. So you just shrug that off and talk to us. So that communication between parents and children is important, but how much of that is happening, in this world of...
And you don't have to be an immigrant to have that kind of gap with kids. We see that all the time.
That's a great point.
We have to take a really quick break, but let's pick that up on the other side because that's a big deal, and if you guys can intervene in any of that, that would probably make a huge difference. Our guest today is Raheel Rasa. She is with the Clarion Project. She's an advisory board member, and we're talking about radicalization. I was thinking, Raheel, back a long time ago in another life, I taught English as a second language, and I noticed we had a wide variety of people, some Asian. I mean, there were people from Sweden all over the place, but the constant was the parents who didn't speak English and didn't know a lot about the culture, they deferred to school and what their kids told them, really, about how things work here. We had a huge problem starting in our community with they were Laotian, actually, and the Laotian gangs were becoming a big deal because the kids would tell the parents, "Oh, American kids, they stay out till 11 o'clock, like on school nights. They get to do, you know, this, that, and the other crazy stuff that American kids didn't get to do." But they were the translators for the
parents.
Parents
didn't know the difference, though.
Parents had no clue because the kids were the translators. They spoke English. The parents didn't. So the kids just really walked the parents right through the whole thing and got away with, I mean, things that we...
Well, my kids tried that too, but
how'd that work out?
When my kids were growing up, we monitored what they saw on the internet. We didn't give them cell phones till they were adults. We knew who their friends were. We knew who their friends' parents were. And so, you know, you have to have a very active part in your children's life. Now we are looking at a time when children and parents communicate through a click of a button. You know, so and it's all about sound bites. How much communication is there? So everyone has to be part of this movement. This is the important thing that I tell all my audiences and people that I meet, that depending on just the teachers or counselors, you know, all religious teachers, to somehow shape your children's life is not enough.
Well, you said something earlier.
Told responsibility.
Yeah, you mentioned something earlier that kind of struck a chord, and that was you told your kids if you want to learn about our religion, you get that from us and not from somebody else. That's a really good point. And I just wonder how many parents actually do that in that culture.
But see, regardless of your culture, the same thing, we were talking about it on the break, same thing goes with sexuality. You know, a lot of parents have deferred to the school system for that.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, we all know that message is all over the map, most of it going the wrong direction.
Right.
Well, we see what's happening to our kids. Look at the world around us. I mean, it's a dangerous world.
Oh, boy.
I'm glad that my kids have grown up, and I'm concerned about, you know, my grandchildren. And I do the same with them. We talk about everything. So, you know, we alert them about the dangers of, you know, stranger danger, and we alert them about bullying. We talk to them. But how many parents talk to their kids about radicalization? And this is a no-no because, the regressive left political correctness has sort of made people immune to the idea that they can talk about the dangers of radicalization. But if we understand that this is a global movement, this is a global jihad, so to speak, and these extremists are just waiting around the corner for kids who are, again, have questions or are at loose ends and have no support systems, and they grab them. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a way of, intervening, again, before they get to them. And that can only be done through educational programs. That can only be done, through some sort of programming that is sponsored by the government. And, of course, our activism on the ground, and by everyone being involved, which means civil society, parents, Muslims, non-Muslims, everyone, because when there is a problem of radicalization in America, it is not a Muslim problem. It's an American problem, and it needs an American solution.
But I think what you said about government involvement wouldn't the kids be more leery of a government program rather than getting their guidance from community leaders and parents?
But the government needs to help the community leaders.
Back it up, sure.
Right.
Yes, they should back it up because, you know, these are programs which need funding. They need support. They need a green light to go ahead.
Yeah, you need to reach, too.
We can't get into the school systems without, the education department approving it. So, it's a circle, and everyone has to have hold hands and somehow be involved. Now, when I was in Austin and I met law enforcement, and when I met the chief of police, he said, "I want you to come and speak to, you know, my officers on the ground so they can be aware of what the issue is." So we have a mandate where we say we have to expose the problem, educate the masses, and then empower for change from within. the communities themselves have to be the frontline people, the parents who are going to talk to the children, the teachers, the educators. But they need the material, they need the tools on how to have this conversation without being called Islamophobes or racist or bigots.
Right, because that's the big shutdown.
Easiest way to shut up any conversation.
Yeah. Tell me this, what about these, what about the people who just didn't see it coming, they came here, they were so busy trying to figure out how to live their life and survive and all that, and maybe they came here with a child who was a teenager already, and this kid goes back to visit the relatives, because we hear these stories all the time after some bombing or whatever, and they went back to visit relatives, and I mean, my guess is the family thought they were going back to visit relatives. And instead, they were going back
for this big training program.
What's the likelihood that you can help after that process has already kicked in? And the parents are going, hey, I think there's something going on with my kid.
Yes. So this question has come up that can you de-radicalize a young person? And we know people who actually have been radicals and then have, come out of it with the help of counseling or support. And then they become the speakers. So actually, they are the best people.
That's the way to do it.
The youth. There is an organization called the Quilliam Foundation, and they do this because the person who founded it was a young British radical, and then he has completely turned over, and now he speaks to youth and tells them how easy it was to get radicalized as a Western-born young person.
And what is it called?
It's called Quilliam. Quilliam.
Interesting.
The Foundation.
All right.
It's run by a guy called Majid Nawaz. Brilliant organization. Probably the first in the UK to start these circles of learning and start these programs. The UK has had more problems, but they have been far ahead of us in addressing the problems and actually creating narratives that to help the situation or creating material. And the government is involved in this counterterrorism program. So the problem is that, terminology like counterterrorism and, anti-radicalization just gets people's backs up. But we have to look at the larger picture. The safety and security of our children is extremely important. And the safety and security of the land also is extremely important. And if we understand that we are doing this work for the betterment of our future generations, then, people should buy into it. But of course, it has to be created for each community individually according to their needs. And this is why I use the example of the Somali community. To me, it is one of the only communities that has actually reached out and said, yes, we have a problem, and could we get help? It's rare to see this happen, in closed communities.
Sure.
So we when they say this, then we want to find ways to help them. And the work has to be done from within activists of their own community. So they can speak to their own people in a language that they can understand. But they need the tools and the support on how to address this issue.
Where are you finding the most success? Because I'm, in my head, I'm picturing little kids, the younger, the better. But that's not necessarily true. They don't always get it when they're little.
Yes, it's a difficult conversation. It has to be presented, in a very, depending on the age group. So what we are going to do with this documentary is that there's going to be a child-friendly version, which, can be shown in school so that it's an easier language for them to understand. And that's why it's important for Muslims like me to be in the forefront so that I can speak about it without being pushed back. And so, as a mother and a grandmother, I can address it with feeling because, this is something that could have happened to my children, and it can happen to anyone's child. And so the more women that are involved in this programming, the better it is, because the mothers are the teachers, the nurturers. And so it's important for them also to understand what is at risk here. And, we have a wish list. We're going to see how this pans out. But the hope is that we can slowly build up communities, support activists, that, we can train them to go out and do this work.
Well, that's kind of awesome. I've also added it's QuilliamInternational.com is their
Quilliam Foundation.
Quilliam Foundation, not Quilliam International?
No, Quilliam Foundation. Maybe it's called Quilliam International now. I mean,
yeah,
I could be wrong because they are spreading internationally, yes.
Yeah, because it says the world's first counter-extremism organization?
Yes, absolutely, they are.
Okay, that's good. Because there were a couple other Quilliam things, but they were kind of unrelated.
No. This is them.
There's quite a bit of information online, so I just wanted to let people know I posted that on the site if you'd like to read more about it. Pretty interesting.
Yes, definitely. That's
very cool.
That's something.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll come right back and finish up to the top of the hour with you. Anything we've left out, which is probably everything. So many things we don't know. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I was at the immigration scene, shining and feeling clean. Could it be a sin? I got stopped by the immigration man. He said he doesn't know if he can. Let me in. Let me in, immigration man. Can I cross the line and pray I can stay another day? Let me in, immigration man. I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway. And your smile is a thin disguise.
For all those terrorist recruiters out there.
Yeah. Nice try.
We're wise to your gig now.
I like your choice of music. Very appropriate.
Yeah, maybe you can, you know, work in some oldies but goodies to your training thing.
Yes, I'm sure music would be a great help. In fact, I often think that if the extremists were exposed to some good classical music, perhaps it might calm their nerves and they would put down their arms. But of course, they think that music is a sin. So.
Oh, yeah.
All of it?
Yes, most all of it, absolutely. They think that it diverts. And anything that's good is a sin for them. It's, killing, of course, is not a sin for them. But
Yeah, how confusing. It's kind of like now where we have, like, smart cars that are stupid and we have, you know, smart meters that are stupid. And good music is all bad. Wow. That does explain a lot about them, though.
All music is bad, yeah, so you can imagine their mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mother was a classical cellist, and so obviously I didn't grow up in a home that was going to be radical friendly, I suppose. So do you find any places in the country that are more,
susceptible?
Yeah, like hotbeds for this stuff? I mean, are you guys targeting certain places as opposed to, you know?
Well, anywhere that there are large immigrant communities, because, this is a relatively... a new issue. It wasn't there. I mean, there were different kinds of extremism and radicalization 50 years ago, but what we are talking now about is the war that the extremists have declared on the West. So the education component of this is extremely important. It's important for ordinary citizens to know that there are influences of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, of Wahhabism, Khomeiniism, and so it's important to get the whole picture and understand how insidious these messages are. And the irony of the situation is that the extremists who are living right in our land, use our very freedoms against us.
Sure.
They know just how far to go before they are above the law. They just stay under the line. So they're very, very clever. And I think that one of the big mistakes Western governments have made is to think that somehow these people are, barbaric, illiterate people living in a cave in Tora Bora. They couldn't be far wrong. They have spent billions of dollars on technology. They know how we tick. They know how we think. They know what buttons to press. They know exactly how to use the system, and they do it to the best of their subversive agendas. So we need to be a little clever. There's a difference in between being compassionate and kind, and we want to be that. We want to be humane. But I always give the analogy that I would love to invite people into my home and take care of their needs. But if they want to disrupt my furniture, I would be very careful about that. So, you know, we have to look at those people for whom loyalty to the land is not a priority, who want to destroy us from the inside. And once we are aware of that, then, you know, a counter-narrative, a way of dealing with it is extremely important because, as I said, it's a war of ideas. It's not a war of weapons. So no amount of weapons can deal with this situation. It's like the head of a monster. It'll keep popping up. So we have to go to the root. Where is the messaging coming from? Who is radicalizing our kids? And while we create the programs of prevention, we also have to, you know, find where the evil is coming from.
Right. Are you finding the influence of these folks gaining steam, or are we kind of heading it off a little bit more now that we're getting smarter about it?
Are we?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I mean, you'd have to be kind of stupid not to notice that there's a pattern. But, I mean, our media regularly buries the facts and tries to make it look like, oh, this has nothing to do with an ideology. This is just one person who, you know.
Lone wolf.
So, of course. So, you know, that definitely gives them encouragement. You know, when there is a terrorist attack, you have everybody coming out, you know, they're not in the talking head saying it's a lone wolf. There's no such, in my understanding,
no
such thing as a lone wolf.
No.
Well, even a lone wolf belongs to a group somewhere.
Somewhere, and someone has radicalized them.
Yep.
This is what I mean. So, you know, they have the support, they have the weapons, they have the finances. So it's coming from somewhere. And that brings me to my second recommendation that I made to the U.S. Congress, which is to track the foreign money that is coming from those countries that promote terrorism. It's coming into our universities, into our educational institutions, into our religious institutions. And that needs to be tracked because, you know, you track the money and you take care of half the problem. So there is funding for these people, and you need to know where it's coming from and put a stop to it.
Well, we have organizations that are operating in the U.S. that I think are pretty, I mean, Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, some of these guys
yes.
that are obviously bad guys promoting the wrong stuff, and yet they have been able to kind of silence the critics because...
Well, they're operating within the boundaries
of the free speech
legality.
And all that.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. So this is what I meant. They're extremely clever. They promote the victim ideology.
Right.
And that victim ideology then, you know, creates other problems. So and that awareness is there. But, you know, we as activists can only expose the problem. The policymakers are the ones who have to take charge. We would like the Muslim Brotherhood to be declared a terrorist organization like other Muslim countries have done. I mean, the United Arab Emirates has declared CARE a terrorist organization. How cool is that? It's a Muslim country that has done that.
Right.
Yet in America, people are reticent to speak out and say anything because, oh, my God, they'll be called bigots. And this is how successful the regressive left has been. So when you ask me if the problem is worse, it has gone underground, and it's worse because people are not allowed to speak out.
Right.
And, you know, we say we are the land of the free, but are we? Our universities now have a 2x4 square where you can go and have your free speech. But
or you can cower with puppies and crayons in the safe space.
Yes. So where is the free speech? I mean, I came to the West 30 years ago to embrace these values. And I see them corroding, and, you know that your forefathers fought for all of this. So when we don't have a freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and at every step someone is monitoring your words and there's thought police, then these issues fester because this is exactly what subversive groups look for.
Right.
To promote their own agenda. There's a rise in, you know, white supremacist ideology. There's a rise in fundamentalism in all religions. And you see this happening as a sort of a, you know, pushback or reaction to what is happening in the world. So
when they
need to be clever.
When you made a great point there. When you came here, it was the land of the free, and now we are silencing, with all this politically correct speech, How does that kind of make you feel, or how does that make the communities feel when they know that there's really nothing they can do about speaking out and not being labeled?
Well, that's kind of, I mean, my understanding is that's kind of what your project is all about, how to
talk about it.
Yeah, 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 thread the needle to talk about it without being labeled
and
haters.
That is definitely one part of it, is to be able to talk about it. Because unless we talk about it, we can't talk about the solutions. So it's very frustrating. I've seen this happen in front of my eyes. I mean, so, you know, you look at it and you think, what is the world coming to? But we are citizens. We have a right to vote. We choose our elected officials. So, you know, I believe that in a democracy, we should be able to, you know, promote that right to free speech and fight back against this thought police and, you know, fight back against these restrictions. But, you know, people are ambivalent. They want to just go to work 9 to 5 and play golf and have dinner and parties. They don't want to acknowledge that there is a problem. And I understand that because, you know, it makes your life miserable.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and an awareness of the problem puts a great deal of responsibility.
Right, but the alternative is much worse. I mean, if you don't address it and we don't get a handle on it, what's coming at us?
It's obviously not going away.
Is going to be a lot worse.
I know we only have like a minute and some, but what kind of pushback are you getting from the Muslim community in general? I mean, if you can generalize it.
No, you can generalize largely.
I'm assuming it's pretty big.
It is, but we are also very positive. I'm an eternal optimist, and I always have hope. And the reform movement does an extraordinary amount of work, and people can, you know, look at our mandate. We are growing by the day. People are supporting us, both Muslims and non-Muslims. And those people who can think for themselves, you know, understand that this is an issue that must be talked about. There are many scholars and even imams who are coming on board to say that we must talk about this. If this is an internal problem in the Muslim world, we as Muslims have a moral and ethical responsibility to address it in a respectful way. Now, what happens is that, of course, there's always the other extreme, you know, where it's offensive and hateful, and that doesn't help the cause, because this is exactly what the extremists want. They look at it and say, aha, see, they hate us, and you know, now this is why we have to kill them.
Sure.
Yeah.
People must realize that there are ways of dealing with this.
Right. Well, keep up the good work. I mean, it's a blessing to have somebody out there fighting a good fight, so... Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, and as you have more programs and things, keep us posted, and we'll have you on so you can talk about them.
We will. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks very much. Our guest has been Raheel Raza. We're going to be shifting gears, talking about the FISA process next hour. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.